WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. David Salley, one of the art world stars of the 80s, has directed his first feature film. It's a stylish, offbeat comedy about con men called Search and Destroy. The movie stars Griffin Dunne as a man with a dream. The dream is to produce a film. The reality is he's a two-bit promoter deep in debt to the IRS. The film he wants to make is an adaptation of an inspirational book by a self-help meister played by Dennis Hopper. Christopher Walken plays the underworld businessman who may be willing to back the film. Director David Salley is famous in the art world for his collages. Art critics have weighed in on both sides. Peter Schechtel called his canvases ready-made dreams, as intimate as if I dreamed them myself. Robert Hughes wondered how the gallery guards could stand to be with the paintings 8 hours a day. Search and Destroy may be David Salley's first time directing actors, but the actors seem to revel in their eccentric roles.
I thought of each actor as a highly imagistic charge, which I could then juxtapose one against the other, making a work which is, for me anyway, was reminiscent of the way I work in painting, but it's probably different from the way a so-called real director would work, that is to say, you know, some kind of realistic, or, you know, some idea of realism in the ensemble. I mean, my idea of how to use the ensemble was to use it abstractly, and thereby, at least the goal was to arrive at some higher kind of realism, which is the world of the film itself. I mean, the way people tend to judge acting in movies is, you know, do we know these people? Do these people resemble the people on the street corner? And I just don't think that's necessarily the most interesting way to approach cinematic acting. I think we're trying to make something on screen which doesn't necessarily resemble the people that you see every day, but is true to its own reality, the world of the film reality. That was my goal.
I love the way you used color and composition in the film. Each scene seemed to have its own color scheme, its own color theme. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you chose the colors in each scene to create a mood, to create the tone.
The first thing that you learn about a film is that every single thing in the film has to be put there so that it can be photographed. When people look at films, I think, and think of them as somehow, you know, their world, mirroring their world, which is fine, but it's not really what's interesting about it to me. You know, if you want to photograph an actor in front of a white wall, you have to make the white wall to put the actor in front of to photograph them. So knowing, I mean, the starting point, this sounds like a tautology, knowing that everything in the film is a result of a decision, you just at the outset make those specific decisions about palette. But the way I felt about the color is the same way I felt about the acting styles, the juxtaposition of acting styles, which I can go back to that just for a moment. There was some complaining in the critical reception of the film about John Turturro being so-called over the top. And I mean, my response to that was I was so incredulous. It's like, what's wrong with seeing John Turturro uncork? Because he does it in such a spectacular and interesting, compelling way, which has so much to do with the life of the film. I mean, I you know what I'm saying? It doesn't, you know, I'm not interested in those kind of criteria. Mm-hmm. You know, whether someone is over the top or not is not part of my, you know, vocabulary.
Well, John Turturro had these great over-the-top jackets, too. I mean, he had jackets that had the pigment of crayons.
Well, that was one of John's contributions.
Those were really his jackets?
No, I mean, his idea of the character's costume. He had this idea that this is a character who can't decide what to wear, so he wears more than one jacket at a time. So that was just a brilliant idea, so it gave us the opportunity to give him a bright burgundy jacket and a mustard-colored jacket and a navy hooded sweatshirt and a lot of other doodads besides. And, you know, John gave us the impetus to take the character further, and I think in turn gave him the impetus to use the physicality, which is his, you know, one of his particular gifts as an actor, to make that scene that in the tailor shop into more of a musical scene than it would have been otherwise.
So what was it about filmmaking that was closest to your work as a painter, and what were you really unprepared for?
I don't know if it's because it's a failure of imagination on my part, but I felt like it was all virtually the same work as painting. People have wanted to know, how was it possible to make this radical shift? I didn't feel like it was doing anything different from what I do all the time anyway. It just takes longer. The thing that you're unprepared for is just how incredibly long the days are, and how, you know, the physical demands are the things that I was unprepared for anyway. The rest of the actual process itself, filmmaking, I mean, I don't know if this is good or bad, but it didn't feel very different to me.
Artist David Sally is my guest. He's directed his first feature film. It's called Search and Destroy. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with film director and artist David Sally. Let me ask you a couple of things about your paintings. Many of your paintings have used a collage kind of style, incorporating found objects, elements of classical paintings, elements from advertising, whiskey bottles, other kind of consumer culture kind of things. Why have you used collage as a form? What interests you about collage?
I hate collage. I just don't know any other way to do it. It's not something that I feel is a particularly bright decision.
What do you hate about it?
Well, I mean, it's everything in my nature that I wish were different, but I can't do anything about.
Like
the inability to have one single fixation, the inability to say this and not that. I tend to only be able to think of things in terms of linked pairs, or in terms of, you know, oscillation between opposite poles, or between this thing next to that thing. It's how my mind works. It's almost a kind of, I don't know what, you know, a brain problem. But I'm not something I'm particularly enamored of. It's just, you know, the way I function.
Did you ever work any other way in your paintings?
Well, when I have tried to work in a more singular way and speak in a more singular voice and say one thing and not all the other things, I'm just unconvinced by it. I never feel convinced by it.
Do you have trouble making up your mind about decisions in your own life?
Oh, I don't know.
But really, does that carry over into, like, what am I going to wear today?
Or I mean,
what am I going to do with my life?
I could be wrong, but I think people who know me fairly well, or know me even a little bit, would probably describe me as a fairly deliberate and, you know, person who doesn't hem and haw and, you know, I do what I do and I, you know, all that kind of stuff, fairly straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But on the inside, maybe this is the way to appear on the outside too, who knows? This is like turning into a little therapy session. I mean, I'm often paralyzed by indecision, and, you know, you just, the whole idea of being an artist is to try to turn your liabilities into assets. That's all that one can do as an artist. That's the job in a nutshell.
You came to New York at a time when there was a lot of searching in the art world, conceptual art, installations, a lot of experimentation. Was that a good thing for you to come of age during a time when the whole art world was being redefined in a way? When you could try anything?
I don't think it was a very good time, and I'm sure that it would have been more fun and more interesting and more fruitful to have come of age in a different time. I think in retrospect it was a destructive time, and I think that it held me back, if anything. And I don't have any particular nostalgia for the early and mid 70s in the art world.
What do you think was destructive about it?
Well, I think it was quite literally a nihilistic moment. I don't think it was about discovering alternative ideas about consciousness. I think it was more just about tearing down, and I think it was It was an unearned cynicism that was rampant and unchecked because there was nothing positive to counter it with. And I think that what's been happening in the art world the last few years is strikingly similar to what was going on in New York when I first moved to New York. I think that the way in which adolescence, the way in which late adolescence, I mean, I know this because I lived it, the way in which late adolescents dismiss everything out of hand without having any real understanding of what it is they're dismissing is very much the way the art world works. And that I think it's not understood the degree to which negativity is an actual cultural force and takes on a momentum and has to be managed like a forest or something. Otherwise, it kind of burns out of control.
In the 1980s, there was so much investing in art, people buying it as an investment, and I think that helped really drive the prices up a lot. Did you ever feel like you or your work had become the equivalent of a commodity on the stock market, and that you were watching your stock rise and fall?
Well, you know, the point is, I think that is part of what art does in this culture, and always has, and has since the time of Rembrandt. That is part of the reality of art. Do I think it's bad and destructive and so on and so forth? Not necessarily. I think what's bad and destructive is to think that somehow that means the artist is insincere or lacks for higher, aesthetic or emotive or communicative goals. I think the two things are absolutely compatible, and one doesn't really have much impact on the other, and it's nothing to get upset about. And having said all that, yeah, I mean, you know, you don't like thinking of yourself in those terms, and you don't like hearing about yourself in those terms, and you don't like people in being interested in your work because its prices are going up, and likewise you don't like people dismissing your work because the prices are going down. What I'm trying to say is that the work is independent of all that, and yet that all that stuff is a reality of being an artist in the modern world.
Do you have any control over pricing, or is that something you just watch happen?
Well, the market decides. The individual artist can say whatever, but it's the price someone pays for something is an agreement between the world and the artist that this is the price that someone will pay for it. It's not up to the artist alone. It's a test of consensus, and it's completely arbitrary. It has nothing to do with anything, and anyone who says otherwise is lying. But then again, I mean, what is worth anything in the culture? I mean, who sets the prices for baseball players or, newspaper sellers? I mean, the whole thing is arbitrary.
Do you think that your movie Search and Destroy is going to have any effect on your painting? Lead you in any unexpected directions, any new directions?
It already is. It's very hard to describe them. It is having an effect in the studio. I had, for years, wanted to make paintings. I should backtrack. For 15 years, I've been making paintings which have as their imagistic source black and white photographs that I take in various ways. But almost always, pretty exclusively, the subject in the photographs was a single figure. But for a long time, I'd been thinking about groups of figures, but I couldn't quite manage it. I couldn't quite visualize it or just pull it off in terms of doing the work. When I wanted to make paintings of groups of figures, I would borrow the imagery from existing sources. One result of making the film is I actually assembled a group of performers, actors, dancers in my studio and photographed them as a group. And the photographs of these groups of people are forming the basis of the paintings I'm doing now. So that's a fairly concrete, direct result.
Artist David Sally, he directed the new film, Search and Destroy. This is Fresh Air.